Well, good morning, everybody. Our subject then, do not judge. Do not judge. It's kind of an odd thing to think about in this society because we have all sorts of things to judge. Trevor's given us some examples, and you know, I've got the other couple of other examples as well, because there's a lot of judging which goes on and which is right and which is proper. For instance, we're to test teaching to see if it's scriptural. So if I tell you anything that's not scriptural, just disregard it. You can tell me later, form a queue or something. We're to comfort one another if there's sin between us. That means we're having to judge that there is some sort of sin between us, and we need to confront that and address that issue in a loving way. And we've covered that subject already in our services. Of course, there are courts of law where judges render judgment. That's the most obvious use of judging. But then this little picture. As a child, I'd be out with my friends, you know, playing in the streets and things, and well, sometimes something would happen to bring me to my mum's attention, and so, as it were, I would be hauled before her, and why did you do whatever it was I'd done? And I had a friend called Barry, and I'd say, well, Barry did it. Which parent has ever heard that justification? And my mum would say to me, and if Barry jumped off a cliff, would you do that too? And it always used to annoy me, because, no, of course I wouldn't do that. But she was trying to draw my attention to the need to exercise some discernment, some judgment about what I was doing. And, of course, that was her point, calling me to distinguish foolish from sensible behaviour. So given all that, how are we to understand this section that Trevor's read to us today? Well, first of all, in anything, we need to look at the context. This is part of the Sermon on the Mount, in that whole wonderful section of teaching given by Jesus. And I think the context for this bit, and in fact quite a lot of it, comes from chapter 5, verse 20, as Jesus said, "For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." And then having said that, we're followed by what for us is more than two chapters giving examples of how we live more righteous lives. And this is simply another one of those sections. And here, Jesus is forbidding a self-righteous attitude in our judging of others. Not to be done. There are three wrong views encapsulated here that I'd like to sort of draw out briefly. A wrong view of God, a wrong view of other people, and a wrong view of ourselves. And so those are the three headings that we'll address this topic under. So starting with the wrong view of God. It's a section from James. "Brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister or judges them speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you are not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor?" God is the only lawgiver with the right to judge. If we judge others, we're acting as if we're God. I mean, how crazy is that? And our passage included a warning about do not judge, because if we do, then we'll be judged according to the same standards that we apply. How many of us claim to have perfect standards or perfect understanding? We don't. We have very limited understanding. We don't know all the circumstances. We don't know what's gone on. Our own hearts have problems where we get biased, shall we say, in certain areas. We don't want to be judged by those standards ourselves, so we shouldn't do it to others. And then the thought of a wrong view of other people. If we judge others, we're erroneously thinking that we're superior to them. And I've got an example for you. We're going to watch a clip from one of my favorite superheroes. I don't know who your favorite superheroes are. Maybe you like Iron Man or Captain America or Thor. Great name, big hammer. Perhaps you don't like superheroes. I don't know, but I like superheroes. And my favorite superhero goes by the wonderfully absurd name of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The name was enough to put many people off, but it really is a true gem of a show. And parts of it are still discussed in academic circles. I'm not kidding, there are academic papers written about this show. As well, of course, the fan base still loves it. This clip is from the very first episode. Buffy had to leave her old school in Los Angeles, and they moved some hours away to a new area, and she and her mum have moved there. And in this clip, it's her first day in a new school. So she needs to get on with people, all of that sort of stuff that you need to do. They'd be in year 11 if it was UK, so they're about 16 by this time because it's a chunk of the way through the year. And she's going to meet two other characters, Cordelia and Willow. Let's watch that. See, Cordelia is initially friendly, but soon makes it clear to be accepted into her own group, you have to abide by certain standards of fashion and avoid certain other people, the losers that she referred to. Later, Buffy befriends Willow, you'll be pleased to hear. And due to that and a misunderstanding that happened, Cordelia spreads unpleasant rumors about Buffy. And she's openly dismissive of her when they meet face to face. And it leaves you asking, what right has she to behave like that? I mean, it really is atrocious behavior. And the answer, of course, is she has no right to behave like that, and nor do we. We do not have the right to judge other people as if we are superior. Other people are not under us, no matter what anybody else may imply or suggest. If we think they are, then we've got a wrong view of them. To be gossipy, tale-bearing, critical and judgmental is to live under the false illusion that those we judge are somehow inferior to us. They are not. They are not. So that leads us to a wrong view of ourselves. Our verses include this section about logs and specks. They refer to various sins, it's generally thought. Sometimes people think of the log in the eye as some sort of really gross, horrible sin. But if that were the case, then, well, people who tend to have gross, really horrible, obvious sins tend to want to keep those quiet. And so they tend to be quiet themselves. They're not going to start accusing other people. So what sort of thing is it that you could have a plank in your own eye and not see it? And the answer to that is there is a sin. It's called self-righteousness. It can look at the plank and see only righteousness, only goodness, and is to be avoided. It's a sin that Jesus repeatedly condemns in the scribes and Pharisees. Self-righteousness, not a good thing. It's a sin of blindness. Looks at itself and imagines it only sees righteousness. It's terrible, really. Jesus tells us to stop and think about our own sin, about the mistakes we have made, the wrong things we have done and had to put right perhaps in the past, to be conscious of our own sin. Because unless we're conscious of our own failings, our own things we've done wrong, how can we ever be in a position to help someone else? Yeah, if we think we're perfect, we're wrong. And we're so easily tempted to do that. I'm going to see one more clip from my wonderful show. This is much later on now, it's more than a year later. Buffy's now 17. She's had a boyfriend who she's been very much in love with. They did something and now he's turned totally evil, totally nasty and horrible, and extremely dangerous to both her and all her friends and all the people she knows because he's very vindictive. Buffy is full of guilt and hurt about this, as anybody would be, I would think. The other person in the clip is Giles. That's her mentor. He's kind of a father figure in the show. So let's see how he reacts to her remorse. How do we react when people we know have made mistakes? Are we so gracious as to be loving and supportive in those circumstances? I think this is a good phrase to keep in mind. There, but for the grace of God, go I. It's something I've used in my life And I think it's a good one to remember. Carol Wimber, John Wimber's wife, I guess you've all heard of John Wimber, founder of the Vineyard Movement, tells a tale of when she was in a service, big congregations, and thousands of people in the Vineyard churches, and she found herself judging the lady in front of her. She was a mess all over the place. She was just, I don't know, something about her was really getting to her. She was getting quite frustrated. And during the worship time, and you know, people raised their hands for praise, for some reason, the lady turned her hands around. And Carol saw on her wrists the marks where she'd attempted to cut herself, where she'd attempted to take her own life or do harm to herself in some way. But here now, this lady was worshipping God. She was in a good place. And the fact that she was, you know, not as well kept as she might be, well, so what? Carol had to repent of her rush to judgment. Romans 14, verse 13. Therefore, let us stop passing judgment on one another. Instead, make up your mind not to put any stumbling block or obstacle in the way of a brother or sister. Good words. And I'm not sure I could sum up this whole message any better than by quoting from The Message, the same section that Trevor read. Don't pick on people, jump on their failures, criticize their faults, unless, of course, you want the same treatment. That critical spirit has a way of boomeranging. It's easy to see a smudge on your neighbor's face and be oblivious to the ugly sneer on your own. Do you have the nerve to say, let me wash your face for you, when your own face is distorted by contempt? It's this whole traveling roadshow mentality all over again, playing a holier-than-thou part instead of just living your part. Wipe that ugly sneer off your own face, and you might be fit to offer a washcloth to your neighbor.